This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Coming up later in the show, we'll hear from two of our most popular guests, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and our very own General Jerry Boykin. But first, almost a year after becoming law in Mississippi, a bill aimed at protecting religious freedom was the focus of oral arguments in a federal appeals court earlier this week. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant joined Tony on Monday to talk about it.
Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, and you're absolutely right. It seemed as if even before the law went to the floor, you saw the left begin to attack it, begin to distort what the law actually said, begin to use every type of intimidation and threats, threatening corporations that were here in Mississippi, bringing all the political pressure they could bear on the members of the Mississippi legislature, who I'm proud to say stood strong, and saying this is simply a law that would stop government, that would prevent government from compelling an individual who had, because of their deeply held religious or moral beliefs, the government or local political subdivision, such as the city, could not say, we are ordering you to do so, or you will be punished either civilly or criminally, or perhaps your business license will be taken away from you. So this is a controlling of government against religious persecution, in effect, and we are fighting now in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals there in Lubbock, Texas, making our oral arguments.
You know, it just seems like to me, Governor, that defending religious liberty sounds like the American way in keeping the government from penalizing people because of their faith. I mean, something sounds like it's upside down.
It does, and you know, Tony, it is because I think a Judeo-Christian belief, because we've seen religious liberties and religious exceptions be offered to, I think, Muhammad Ali, who, of course, was a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War, and no less authority than the United States Supreme Court said, yes, Muhammad Ali has a religious exception because he is Muslim, and he does not believe that taking another life is the proper thing to do, unless, if I remember it at that time, unless approved by Elijah Muhammad. That was an exception that even he had. Other exceptions we know at Guantanamo Bay, where female soldiers are not allowed to shackle those that are being kept there, the terrorist or known terrorist at Guantanamo Bay. So we see the religious exceptions, except it appears as if it occurs with a Judeo-Christian belief regarding marriage. And then the federal lawsuits began, the intimidation, the threats, the political pressure brought upon everyone from those that are involved in maintaining collegiate sporting events to corporations.
You know, it does seem, Governor, that it's these political issues, these issues that have been, well, I say political issues, they've been deemed political issues. They're really moral, spiritual, issues of longstanding historical precedent. For instance, the abortion issue, I mean, that's relatively new, 1973, when the courts basically thrust this upon the nation, this idea of wholesale abortion. You know, it runs counter to natural law. Same thing, redefinition of marriage. 5,000 years of human history tells us differently. But because you believe that, all of a sudden, you have the weight of government coming down on you, trying to force you into this reconstructed view of marriage and life. And, you know, that's never been that way in this country.
No. And Tony, again, I see it as a civil liberty. You know, I have certain liberties. And as you know, when this government was founding, the founding fathers said this Declaration and this Constitution are there to protect your civil liberty, so that the government cannot come in and enter your home without a warrant, so that they cannot arrest you without due process of the law, so that you have the right to public speech. You have the right to association. All these rights that you have these religious freedoms that are premier in those amendments to the Constitution and the First Amendment that says you have these religious freedoms that will not be abridged by in any form by the government. And so we are fighting for these civil liberties of that individual right. that has a religious and a moral right. position. You know, government all the time says we have such a certain moral standards that we believe in. No, if you're agnostic, you don't believe in murder. You don't believe that another life should be taken by a criminal offense, for example. You might not believe in child molestation. You may say, look, I'm agnostic in that, but I know there's a moral standard that shouldn't allow those types of relationships with children, for example. You don't believe that one spouse ought to be able to physically abuse another one. And so there are all sorts of civil liberties that we have afforded people for generations, and again, religious exceptions happen to be one of them. And except in this particular instance, where I think you see the political correctness that involves this issue of marriage, it's trying right. to change completely the entire dynamic.
We're up against a break, but I just one final question for you, Governor. I mean, really, aren't those who are challenging this law that you helped get passed, aren't they really seeking to restrict freedom and impose their beliefs on others? Isn't that what this
is
all about?
That's exactly what they're doing. That's exactly. They're saying, I want to take away what religious freedoms Constitution may afford you, and I'm going to impose my beliefs upon your belief structure, and you must accept them or the government will punish you. That's what
Governor,
it comes down to.
I thank you for protecting the rights of people and this first freedom, the freedom of religion. Thanks so much for what you're doing in Mississippi.
Tony, thank you so much. We're fighting the good fight. God bless you.
You can find out more about Governor Bryant when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at the latest on what's going on in North Korea.
It's happening everywhere and not just in blue states. Radical LGBT activists are forcing potentially dangerous bathroom policies on schools, businesses, and other public places, violating the safety and privacy of women and children and threatening religious freedom. In a special one-hour program, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by public officials, experts, and victims to talk about what some states are doing to protect women and children and to defend the freedom to believe. Visit frc.org/privacy to view this event and many more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday's edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by the Executive Director of Family Research Council and retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. They discussed yet another missile test by North Korea and the ramifications for peace in the Far East. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, this is a serious problem facing us on the international frontier when you look at what's happening in North Korea. How big of an issue is this before the president, and does he have to address it?
He has no option but to address it. It's a huge issue. This is an existential threat because this is nuclear. And, the most senior defector that has ever defected from North Korea to South Korea is a guy named Dae Young-ho, who was the assistant ambassador in London when he defected to South Korea. And he just told NBC News, Lester Holt, that Kim Jong-un is prepared to use a nuclear weapon against America if he feels at all threatened. Now, that is a very serious situation because one nuclear weapon, given today's technology, could be absolutely devastating within quite a distance around it. And you've got a man that is absolutely certifiably crazy sitting on an arsenal of maybe as many as five nuclear warheads.
And of course, he has deployed about 1,000 short range missiles, which obviously are clearly a threat to South Korea, including in that region U.S. military bases. So this, and he has said that he will use them, and is almost taunting the United States with these continued launches, which violate the U.N. Security Council resolution.
Yeah, and he cares nothing about the U.N. Security Council resolutions. He's not interested, pays no attention to them, and he does what he wants to do. But here is a man, what really makes him dangerous is the same thing that made Saddam Hussein dangerous, and that is that he only hears what he wants to hear. And the people that he surrounds himself with, if they don't tell him what he wants to hear, at best, they are forced out of his administration, but at worst, they're killed, to include his own family members. And this guy has been probably, I think it's safe to say, repeatedly assured that he could use a nuclear weapon against U.S. or allied targets there without any retaliatory consequences. And I think if you listen to this defector and what he has actually said, I think the guy is, I think he's nailed it. This is a very unstable situation. To his credit, Donald Trump says, I own it now, and I have to do something about it. But let me just throw in, as a final thought on this, that this should have been dealt with 25 years ago, when Bill Clinton was negotiating this, and the rhetoric that we heard out of Bill Clinton at that time is exactly what we've heard out of the Obama administration today regarding Iran. And it looks to me like history is repeating itself. And where we are today is where my grandchildren are going to be at in another probably less than 25 years this time, probably a decade.
So, General Boykin, as you consider the options that would be before President Donald Trump, what would be your recommendation on those options, and what would be the priority of those options?
Yep, I see four options, Tony. The least favorable, I think, would be a preemptive military strike, although that is, it has to be an option. Go after his command and control, his storage sites, his production facilities, etc., as a military strike. Secondly is take Kim out. If you have to hire a surrogate and take him out, that would be my second least favorite. The third is to create an internal insurgency that would ultimately destabilize him, a coup, bring him down. That was almost impossible in a society that is as closed as they are. And then the final one is go to the Chinese, make an all-out effort, diplomatic effort, to get the Chinese to deal with Kim, bring him down, get him out of the office, and establish a regime in there that is more stable and more functional than what they have right now. I think the Chinese option is one we ought to be pursuing with great fervor, and I suspect that we are.
It was interesting when Secretary of State Tillerson was asked about this latest launch from North Korea. Tillerson, very short statement, North Korea, quote, North Korea launched yet another intermediate range ballistic missile. United States has spoken enough about North Korea. We have no further comment. That would suggest that maybe the United States has finished talking about North Korea.
First of all, what does that mean, finish talking about North Korea? I suspect that there are, in fact, a number of diplomatic efforts going on, either directly with China or through intermediaries. There are certainly diplomatic negotiations are taking place with South Korea as well as Japan. So I think that there is no option not to talk about North Korea anymore. But I hope that we're able to persuade allies in the region and even China, who we have never considered to be necessarily an ally,
right,
to persuade them to step forward and take action. And as you and I discussed previously, Tony, China was holding Kim Jong-un's brother in a safe place for the eventuality that he would be brought back into Korea to replace Kim Jong-un. He's the one that was killed in Kuala Lumpur when they spread VX on his face. But that was the great hope of China, that ultimately they would find a way to bring Kim down and they would put the brother back in, because the brother was far more stable and reasonable, and he was also China-friendly. So I think the Chinese, their primary option has been overcome by events. But I also think that Chinese have huge interest, global interest, in making sure that North Korea does not start another global conflict, and one that will reverberate throughout the Pacific Rim in particular.
Well, let's hope so. I do think the United States has finished talking about, at least I think, the Trump administration, and they're ready to take action, as opposed to the previous administration that was all talk. Or as they would say in Texas, all hat, no cattle. So maybe we'll see a little bit this time.
You can find out more about General Boykin when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, we'll discuss the continuing ongoing news about the Obama administration's efforts to identify Trump campaign officials. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
In America, we now confront a crisis of governance created by our Supreme Court, which has become an almost unchallengeable, unreviewable super legislature by silencing all debate on pressing social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage. That's why the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch, who has a proven track record of ruling as a constitutional originalist, has pleased conservatives. For a full explanation of Judge Gorsuch's qualifications for that role and why he should be confirmed, visit frc.org/Gorsuch.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Much has been said recently about Susan Rice, former National Security Advisor to Barack Obama, and her role in the Obama administration's alleged spying on members of President Trump's transition team. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann joined FRC President Tony Perkins to discuss this, Syria, and much more. Here's Tony Perkins.
Michelle, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you. A pleasure to be here with you.
I should say back to Washington Watch, a frequent guest here. Look, you were on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. You've dealt with the sensitivity of classified material. That is closely watched for, you know, obvious reasons. In this case, just so our listeners understand what we're talking about, the government can collect data on foreign individuals.
Only foreign individuals. The only way anything could ever be done on an American citizen and also in the United States is with pre-approval from the FBI, and of course there has to be probable cause in order to do that. None of that happened here.
And what has happened when, let's say, a foreign official is communicating with an American citizen? Mm-hmm. The intelligence gatherers mask the identity
official. The American official is blinded, and it is not even known to the intelligence community. And the way it is listed on any document is American number one or American number two. No identity is related to that for obvious reasons, because we secure the privacy of Americans' phone calls.
So what we have here is reports, acknowledgement that Susan Rice unmasked these American individuals, and they were associates of Donald Trump, a part of his transition team.
That's right. She revealed. So unmasked is kind of an unfamiliar term to a lot of people. What that means is she intentionally asked the intelligence community to reveal and expose the names of the people on this phone call. Now, I just want to give a little context. This is unprecedented. Never before have I ever heard of a national security advisor requesting the intelligence community to reveal to her the names and identities. Now, this is very big, because we have no information that she was looking to secure information from anyone on the Hillary Clinton team or on the Bernie Sanders team. She was looking for information specifically on a political opponent to the Democrat nominee. This is unprecedented.
Is there any oversight or any? I mean, I know we have the FISA court, which mm-hmm. is a secret court, which I have trouble with already. But does anyone provide oversight? Does she simply ask for and is able to obtain then the unmasking?
And this is a whole separate discussion. The FISA court itself is a form of oversight because some things can't be requested in the public
right.
for obvious reasons, national security reasons. But the reason why we even know about this story is because there were people in the intelligence community who were appalled at what Susan Rice had done because they saw that the intelligence community was being misused for political ends. And they wanted that information known. The individuals didn't share classified information, but they were in effect whistleblowers. But again, look at the context. This is one of the most senior people in the United States government. The National Security Advisor is the top person in the United States charged with keeping us safe and with keeping American global and domestic interests safe. And she misused and abused that office. So she used the instrumentality of the intelligence community in our government to gather, without a doubt, political information that could be used against political opponents. No one knows of that ever being done before. And if you're trying to gauge this, this would be 1,000 times worse than Watergate.
If this information was released by her once she obtained it, that is a felony.
Oh, without a doubt. Leaking the information is. And if you notice, Susan Rice lied on TV about, she said, oh, I didn't know anything about this intelligence that was being gathered, when we know, in fact, she did. She's now subsequently gone on MSNBC and admitted, yes, I did know about this. But she says, I did not leak the information. So she's trying to say, I wasn't involved in criminal activity. The point isn't criminal activity. The point is the National Security Advisor was looking to get political right. motivated information and then spread it across the government where it easily could be leaked.
Rex Tillerson making a comment regarding what has unfolded in Syria. We were talking about this yesterday, and of course, we didn't know all the facts. But the evidence pointing to Bashar al-Assad using these chemical weapons, this is what Rex Tillerson had to say earlier today.
There is no doubt that Syria, the Syrian regime under the leadership of President Bashar al-Assad, are responsible for this attack. Assad's role in the future is uncertain, clearly, and it would seem that there would be no role for him to govern the Syrian people. We are considering an appropriate response for this chemical weapons attack, which violates all previous UN resolutions, violates international norms and long-held agreements.
We were talking about this yesterday with General Boykin, and as we were looking at that and North Korea. But those are pretty strong words coming from the Secretary of State, would suggest that something, the United States is going to respond to this.
Well, the Secretary of State was definitive in his remark. He was assigning blame without any question to the current president of Syria. This is very serious. No parent could keep a dry eye if they saw what happens with the use of chemical weapons. It's something across the world that we understand should never be done. World War I taught mankind right. you never use chemical weapons. And here they've been used more than once on one occasion. And we were assured, when I was on the Intelligence Committee, we were told that they were going to be secreted out of the country. Russia was going to be involved in that effort. Clearly, either that didn't happen or there's subsequently been chemical weapon factories that have been created and they're continuing the use of this horrible, inhumane form of warfare, and it must be stopped. Where the United States will go with this now, I'm not sure. During the campaign, President Trump sounded like he didn't want to have a strong footprint in the Middle East, but he also knows who his friends are with Israel. He also knows who the enemies are as well.
Well, this is pretty complicated because it's not just taking on Syria.
Not anymore, because now Iran is sitting parked in Syria. Literally, we in a family research council tour to Israel, we stood on the heights of the Golan Heights.
We were actually watching some of the airstrikes.
We were watching some of the fight go on, where Iran had a presence, Russia had a presence, and this is something that we need to recognize. This is a very serious issue. Times have changed even since the time, Tony, when our group was in Israel, again, underscoring the necessity for maintaining Israeli presence in the Golan Heights. So this is very serious, and where this is going to go, we'll see. The president and the secretary of state will make a determination, but there's no question the secretary of state was definitive on assigning blame.
Well, and when you look at our military capabilities, I mean, our military is not at its peak.
Hardly.
I mean, after a sequestration, you know, from just a material standpoint, it's been reduced under the Obama administration. But then, of course, morale with all the social experimentation. We've got to be very cautious in terms of where we engage militarily, especially when you're talking about not just Syria, but as you point out, you got Iran, you got Turkey, and
North Korea,
and Russia, those. And then, of course, you've got China. Still out there as well.
Well, that's right. And again, you know, I'm not meaning to be partisan, but the United States military was severely weakened, as your listeners know, over the last 9 years. And so now President Trump has made a decision to build up our military and take care of our vets. And you can't just turn that ship on a dime. There's a lot that has to be done. The good news is the decision has been made by this administration that the United States will be strong again militarily. We have to get to that point. But you're right. One rule of warfare is you never go into battle until you know that you've got the resources and personnel to make it happen.
Absolutely.
Because we are committed. We leave no man on the field.
Absolutely.
You can find out more about Representative Bachmann when you visit TonyPerkins.com. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to all the stories when you visit that website. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.